Dr. Google can't fix your knee. The Joint Relief Institute can. Fast joint pain relief, covered by Medicare. Call 708-888-0000, as in zero pain.
It's not a bad lineup, huh? 74, 79, 80, I'll sunshine,
take it, yeah.
51 to sleep at night.
Mm-hmm.
Hello. Although, what did you say the current temperature is at O'Hare?
We're 70.
70. It could be a little warmer for me, but... You know, you can't complain about this.
Shut me up. Splitting hairs, yeah.
Shut me up. In fact, I want to say I'm sorry. I'm just going to start coming up to random strangers, and this is my new line. I'm just, if you meet me or if you see me again, and you go, what's John up to now? Just be prepared. You're going to hear this.
I'm sorry for the realness.
That's my new line. I'm just going to come up to people, and after I say something, like, what will you have? And I'll go, I'll have the chicken chop salad. And then they'll say, oh, okay. And then I'll say, I'm sorry for the realness.
Will you mean it?
Did you watch Kanye with Ellen?
Yeah, most of it. It was uncomfortable, I'll be honest. I didn't.
Was it? Was it uncomfortable?
It was uncomfortable for me to watch because I don't know if his connection to reality is all that solid.
I think that's a really interesting point, Bob. And I think people can hear this and hear one of two things, maybe one of three things. Like you suggest, he's not really tethered. Number two, no, he's just a genius, and that's what they sound like. Or maybe he's a genius who's untethered, right?
Yeah.
And I thought Ellen handled it really well.
Yes.
I mean, I don't think many people in America can pull that interview off and get that much out of him and kind of relax the room. Ellen was a star of that thing. It happened because Ellen played it right. And then Kanye just went to wherever it is that he comes from. You're right. It was very odd. And I want to play a little of it and just kind of walk through it here. And Griff, you are like America's biggest Kanye West fan. Am I right about that?
You're right about that, yeah. That's definitely
okay.
True. Hey, so I'll just say, if you follow Kanye, and I do, this is nothing new. You hear him talk like this every time he's being interviewed by anybody, but the context was... So it's always different levels of... bizarre, and depending on how far you'll go with him, fun. But the context pretty odd. You know, sorry, daytime television.
Well, I know that's the thing. He's doing this to Ellen. He had the feeling he really thought this was a step down. Like, I'm on a daytime TV show. I'm Kanye. Okay, I do stadiums. I don't do Ellen. Right. I mean, I think that's kind of what was in the back of his mind. He didn't know how to talk to daytime television. And so when he did his Kanye thing, he had to almost apologize for it. Do you know what I mean, Griff? That's at least what it felt like to me.
Well, she gets the biggest stars in the world every day. So it's not like his level of celebrity. But, yeah, it's just people don't talk that way. You know, they're there to promote and have fun.
Right.
And
he can't
put it on pause for a second. He's got to bring the truth, whatever that means to him. And so he can't do that. He can't just talk about his new album. He's got to seize every
Was that what he was there to do? Was he promoting his new album?
No, I mean,
is that what he was doing?
He doesn't do promotion like that. He was just there because he likes Ellen, I think.
He's Kanye and, whatever. So, yeah, so remember he asked Mark Zuckerberg for millions of dollars. And it was – I never even paid attention to this detail, but he did it on Twitter. Well, Zuckerberg's kind of Facebook, right? So Ellen starts out the interview, and she asks him a really funny question.
And then you tweeted out that you wanted Mark Zuckerberg to give you $53 million. In hindsight, should that have gone on Facebook?
Yes. I should have put it on Facebook. Now I understand why he didn't hit me back. He was I understand that Zuckerberg doesn't use Twitter.
Yeah.
Even though I have had dinner with him and his wife and told him about how I wanted to help the world, and he said he'd help me, and then blah, blah, blah. And, like, that's how it feels, though. You know, it's like the pursuit of happiness. Like, it's like you're trying to sell this bone density machine or something, you know, in that movie. I feel that if I had more resources, I could help more people. I have ideas that can make the human race existence within our 100 years better. Period. The paparazzi, whatever perception you have of me, starting with the truth, starting with what everyone's thinking, start there.
I'm with you.
Jay is in the building. Throw your mother's hands in the air right now. Put your hands in the air right now. Yes. Okay.
Kind of weird. Did it remind you a little bit of when Tom Cruise started to jump up and down on the sofa on Oprah?
Have you ever felt this way before?
You know what I mean? It kind of had that feel. It was like, it also reminded me, if I just may go on a tangent for 1 second, of the scene from Jerry Maguire.
Don't worry. I'm not going to do what you all think I'm going to do, which is just flip out.
For some reason, I was channeling that while it's talking.
It's really funny that you play that clip from Jerry Maguire. That in Kanye's first Grammy speech, I remember it really well. I've watched it a couple times. It's a really good speech. This is in 2004, way before anybody knew what Kanye was all about. Yeah, it was before anything like this had really happened. But he gave this speech and he said, everybody wants to know what I'm going to say. They think I'm going to freak out. It's exactly like that Jerry Maguire clip.
I think he was going there. His tone changed. You could tell he was like, okay, you think Kanye's going to flip out? And so then, you know, but he's saying, look, I've got ideas. And there's this thing where I guess he really wanted Zuckerberg to give him $53 million so he can make the world better. Right? So Ellen says, okay, well, you know, what is the idea that you have?
Give me one example. Just what the idea is, because maybe somebody watching will give you the money.
Well, we're in a Renaissance period. The exact amount of emotion and color palette and sonics and everything that I put into my music, I put them into the shoes. And they worked. They try to position it through the media in some way that I'm like, whatever your friends might say. You know, so we saw Kanye. How was he? Did he like? But I care about people. I care about. My dad lived in homeless shelters less than 5 years ago to find out. He's a psych major. My mom was the first black female chair of the English department at Chicago State University. I was raised to do something, to make a difference. I didn't take the Oscars as a joke. It was funny, you know what I'm saying? It was like the moment, like all black, you know, actors can talk about the glass ceilings that we've dealt with out in this town. And it's the you get your night, go ahead. Chris Rock's gonna do it. Bam, talk about how many times you've been blocked from being able to excel. I didn't take it as a joke. It ain't no joke, as Rakim said. It ain't no joke. I used to let the mic smoke. Now I slam it and make sure it's broke. That's what I was raised on, Rakim. Fife Dog. Hip-hop. Expression. Hip-hop. Started out in the park. Are you connecting? Picasso is dead. Steve Jobs is dead. Walt Disney is dead. Name somebody living that you can name in the same breath as them. Don't tell me about being likable. We got 100 years here. We're one race, the human race, one civilization. We're a blip in the existence of the universe. And we constantly trying to pull each other down, not doing things to help each other. That's my point.
We'll turn to Griffin now for interpretation and analysis.
I've spent a lot of my life defending Kanye. I'm done now. I can't do it anymore. I mean, I'm still.
Oh, this doesn't need defense though.
No, but or trying to explain him. Yeah,
that's
or something
all
like
asking,
this.
And
people would say, "Really, you're a fan of him?" Yes, I love him. I don't know exactly what he means.
Do you love
either.
Him for the reasons he wants you to love him, or do you kind of love him for the thing he is, which he may not even be aware of?
You're not laughing with him.
You're kind of laughing at him.
I don't laugh at that. It just kind of upsets me because it seems like he's just wants to be heard. And Ellen is someone who's really trying to listen because she likes him too.
She's great. You know what? But you know what? You don't hear in that is Ellen interjecting or laughing or
well, that's
saying
what I mean.
Anything.
But I do. It just hurts me a little bit because he can't get his point across. He just is too intense. He just isn't capable of getting his point across. He just jumps to places that people don't understand. And I think Ellen felt that way too. She's like, I'm here for you and I want to know what you mean.
And she asked
that question in earnest. Give me one of those ideas. Let's let the people know. And he can't really answer.
I don't think he has a concrete answer, though. You know what I mean? So, like,
maybe
it's not like, hey, I've got a new app or I found a way to cure cancer. He doesn't have any He doesn't have anything tangible, but he's got here's what I heard him say. We're all on this earth for a short time. We should do what we can to forward and help the species and one another, right? And I'm not exactly sure how his angry man persona is going to do that, but he said, don't get hung up on that, right? That was one of the points where he was really pitched. And I think what he's saying is, you know, his art, and so help him, his shoes and his fashion are things that can bring people joy. And if he's going to burst through the ceiling, the glass black ceiling, then that's a good thing. And that he is a kind of, and not kind of, he thinks he is a genius on an order of a Walt Disney or a Steve Jobs. Okay. So I thought, by the way, just one last thing, and then we'll take a break and get to the last part of his rant with Ellen, his monologue. But it was pretty cool the way he just fell into a little, you know, a poetry slam there. I mean, it was, I don't know what you call that, if that was rap or poetry slam. It reminded me of beatnik stuff, you know. If we had some bongos underneath that riff, I swear to God it would work. But
well, he was quoting, you know, yeah, rap lyrics, and then he kind of infuses it into his larger point, or tries to anyway. I think that was the idea.
Well, but yeah, I could sense that, but I thought much of what he said there was his own, right?
I think what you're talking about when he got into that poetry field, though, he was quoting. He was quoting Rakim, a rapper from the 80s.
I got it. Okay, it's 120. We'll pause here and then get you 60 more seconds of Life on Planet Kanye on WGN.
I know everybody asked me the question. They wanted to know, what kind? I know he's going to wild out and he's going to do something crazy. Everybody wanted to know what I would do if I didn't win. I guess we'll never know.
So it's Kanye at the... is that at the Oscars, Griff, that we're listening to? Is that the speech you were talking about a little while ago?
That was his first Grammy win for Best Grammy Rap win, Album, yeah. For the College Dropout, his debut. So he wins. He gave a like 2.5-minute speech. That was the last line. And the first and he gets a standing ovation, and one of the first people to stand up is Ellen in the front row.
Oh, no kidding. He remembers. By the way, at the end of that conversation he had with Ellen, he mentioned that he has synesthesia. Have you ever heard of synesthesia?
Yes, I've heard of it many times from Kanye. Things he said, I've heard so many times in interviews from Kanye. But yeah,
wow.
Yeah.
I'm new to this.
It's like I'm shaking talking about it. I know it's daytime TV. But I feel that I can make a difference while I'm here. I feel that I can make things better through my skill set. My skills, I'm an artist. 5 years old, art school, PhD, Art Institute of Chicago. I am an artist. I have a condition called synesthesia where I see sounds. I see them. Everything that I sonically make is a painting. I see it. I see the importance and the value of everyone being able to experience a more beautiful life. When I make clothes, it's funny because I'll sit there with Obama and Leo's talking about the environment, and then I'm talking about clothes, and everyone looks at me like, that's not an important issue or something. But I remember going to school, like in fifth grade, and wanting to have a cool outfit. I called the head of Payless. I'm like, I want to work with you. I want to take all this information that I learned from sitting at all these fashion shows and knocking at all these doors and buying all this expensive clothes, and I want to take away bullying. There was a time when Michael Jackson couldn't get his video on MTV because he was considered to be urban. The Michael Jackson. So I literally have to be Michael Jackson of apparel in order to break open the doors for everyone that will come after I'm gone. I'm sorry, daytime television. I'm sorry for the realness.
I'm sorry, daytime television. I'm sorry for the realness. So that was Kanye on Ellen.
Less uncomfortable now. So he has this word salad. But he believes what he believes.
Yeah, I know.
And he isn't. I mean, I know a lot of musicians, and sometimes they can be sort of non-linear.
Yeah.
You know? But others, it's not a requirement.
Well,
know?
That's a good way to describe
but
him, isn't
it? It was nonlinear, but, you know, he's inspired, so...
Hey, I want to do a quick prop or shout out or thank you to Morley Safer, the 60 Minutes war correspondent, who died this past week at the age of 84. And I don't have time to, and it's a little dated now anyway, to go into any great length about who Morley Safer was and what he did. But he passed away at the age of 84. And he was always a really good writer, and he had a great voice, and he had a great delivery. And you may have discovered this week that, and I remember the video of the Marines in Vietnam setting fire to the thatch huts. Morley Safer's the reporter that first reported that. And when he did, that was a game changer. I didn't know that about reportage or about the war, but that was upsetting to a lot of people, including the president. And not because he said it, but because they did that. Also because he said it, though. And that changed the way the war was covered. Journalists stopped censoring themselves. And maybe the war started to tip even more in the favor of peace, or at least a cessation, an end to the fighting. And so that's his legacy. My favorite line, though, in his obit is this one, and then we'll let it go. It says here, he owned a silver 1985 Ferrari convertible, which he had raced occasionally, and also owned a Bentley when he lived in London, bought with his winnings from a card game. Don't you want to live the kind of life where you win a Bentley in a card game? We'll pause here. Bob will get you a little more news. The Mincing Rascals have a lot to say about a lot of things, and you'll enjoy that next on WGN. Thanks, Bob. It's Saturday, and it's after the 1:30 news, and this is when we do our Mincing Rascals segment, so let's get to it. The Mincing Rascals are me, I'm John Williams, Steve Bertrand from WGN Radio, and then from the Chicago Tribune, Eric Zorn and Kristen McQuarrie. We record about a half-hour-long podcast each week, and I like to feature part of it. Eric Zorn could not join us this week, so the first voice you are going to hear now is going to be Steve Bertrand, who is...
the host of the Business Lunch on WGN.
And I'm Kristen McQuarrie, a member of the Chicago Tribune editorial board.
3,000 people flee the city of Chicago, says the headline. 6,000 have left the metro. Should we care, Steve?
Houston's the biggest city I don't want to go to.
But people are going.
I know. I mean, we were talking about this story, and it's like, I love to travel. I love to see new things. There's nothing I would want to go to Houston. No reason I would want to go to Houston.
You like not paying income taxes?
Well,
that's
I
one
do,
reason.
I like to pay my fair share.
You do?
Yeah.
I found myself going, no, come on. I don't want to lose more ground. And then I thought, that's kind of a stupid attitude.
But what struck me about that story was, I mean, people focused on the city part of it, but it was really a region-wide, right? I mean, from the state
and the metro. 6,000
exactly.
Left the metro.
So from southern Wisconsin into northwest Indiana.
And do you attribute a lot of that to just the dysfunction of the state? Because I know the Democrats like to downplay that, and they say it's the weather, it's this, it's that. I get emails every week from people who are leaving Illinois because of the dysfunction of government officials.
And are they
here.
Really? Do they really leave?
They do. I mean, yeah. They're writing me from Texas and Arizona and Florida, and yes, I mean...
Well, the Tribune ran a story this week. They found a chiropractor in, I think, Houston, and he was standing there looking all happy to have left Chicago. I don't really think people do that. I mean, you hate the fact that government is corrupt and taxes are high, but can you imagine, Steve, saying, that's it, we're out of here because... too many of our governors are in jail? I don't think that happens.
No.
No, but I live in the city, and I'm staring at the largest property tax hike in the city's history this fall. That is only going to be a drop in the bucket to fixing all of the problems with the city's finances. So I do think that plays into it. And part of that story led with the fact that middle-class black families are
yes.
leaving and have left.
Yes,
and
I noticed
have been,
that.
I mean, that has been an obvious factor in my neighborhood for... the 15 years that we've lived there, the people who have the means to get out they're leaving. And there's really no denying that. I mean, Chatham, some stable black neighborhoods on the south side are, you know, emptying out.
Well, that was Phil Rosenthal's point, too. He had an op-ed piece or a column in the Chicago Tribune Friday, and he said, we should focus on quality, not quantity. Don't worry about the numbers, but worry about the quality of life that people are leading. In fact, your piece in Friday's Trib was kind of interesting too, of course, Kristen, that said we should have a playbill, not an agenda, for city council meetings.
The city council approved more borrowing on Wednesday during the meeting. It got very little attention. The Trib did cover it on Monday as it passed through Finance Committee, but it's just become almost not news anymore that the city is just basically functioning on a credit card. A lot of the borrowing was for infrastructure, but some of it is just to cover day-to-day expenses because we still don't have our finances under control. And city council is just an embarrassment of egos. I got fed up waiting 2.5 hours for the actual agenda to begin with Alderman Ed Burke and others who just like to stand and pontificate and use that time, that precious time, to promote themselves. And that's why I suggested that you should hand out playbills instead of agendas, because it's theater. It's ridiculous, in my opinion.
I've never been to a city council meeting, and I could tell that you were in a 2.5 hour meeting you did not appreciate.
They bring they introduce the classes and, you know, the award winner from the 49th Ward and all
they
of that.
They do resolutions, yeah. Right, at first. Yeah. You know, right. Normally
really?
You leave that to the end of the meeting. But you have people who have taken the bus to come downtown to watch something or to have an impact on something else that's on the agenda. They're taking time off of work. They're in parking garages with the meter running. I mean, it's rude. It's rude. And nobody wants to stand up to Ed Burke because he's the influential finance committee chairman, and this is the way the city does it. But you know what? It's rude. And that's pretty much what I...
Well, and then you said they all vote, and was it 49-0, the vote to borrow the money, and that gave you pause. It doesn't sound like you even think that was a really good idea.
Well, no. I mean, all of these aldermen ran for office last year promising to not do any more scoop and toss borrowing, which they just approved back in January.
Yeah, where did you find the campaign promises, the quotes from aldermen? I mean, I don't think it's fair to hold them up when you're running for alderman, Kristen, to their campaign pledges and promises.
Not?
No, they're just aldermen. They just say stuff.
When does the promise thing kick in? How
we shouldn't
up?
We shouldn't hold them accountable. They're aldermen. It doesn't count.
I have all of their questionnaires. When we do endorsements, we have them fill out a questionnaire.
Oh.
So it's in writing, and I keep those. I keep them for state legislators. I keep them for the governor, for the mayor, and I like to go back and remind them of what they said as candidates.
The same week that lines at Midway and O'Hare stretched to 3 hours and an Egyptair plane crashed or vanished off the coast of Greece, do U.S. commuters have any business complaining then?
Okay, yes, but it's not as if we're waiting to get through lines because the measures of security have been stepped up. They're the same as they were 6 months ago. Essentially, it's just that the staffing isn't there, and also that we're trying to sneak our bigger bags on and carry on.
Yeah, what did you think of that demonstration TSA did, Steve? I suppose you heard about that. They took about 20 or so, 10 TSA volunteers. They walked them through the line, you know, doing the things we all do, bags that are too big, things that need to be removed. And then they walked the same volunteers through, and this time they were all compliant. And the line went 3 times faster when the passengers do what they're supposed to do at the checkpoint.
I've been that. I'm that absent-minded person who holds up the line because I'll forget to take my line. And so, yes, part of it is passengers not following the rules.
But that seems to be passing the buck. Steve is right. I mean, something new has happened here. We're understaffed. It's a busier season. They thought that 25 million people would have signed up for the TSA check that would get you through more quickly, and only 7 million have.
Okay, so Ryan Burrell, the WGN reporter this week, needed to do it himself. And frankly, I wanted to do it, and clearly it's not going to work now.
Well, you should, Steve.
Well,
I mean, you travel
now, John,
a lot.
John, he went to do it downtown, and he was fortunate enough to get there before, I think it was 9:30, when they cut off walk-ins for the day. And he was there for 6 hours to get his interview, to get pre-selected. The appointments that they allocate at that particular office are now full through July. So the idea of getting a pre-check as a solution isn't really viable now. That process is just as jammed up.
Man, this is government running things. It's so incompetent what's happening at the airport.
Yeah, in my travels, I also think that they could use a little cheering up training, or, you know, cheerfulness training. I don't think that's the best interaction between passenger and TSA agent.
Do you want that job?
No.
I don't.
I'm already grumpy, and I would be a grumpy.
People videotaping you with their phones, watching you touch their kids inappropriately, and then posting it online. I love those people, you know.
You know, I went through one day last year, and the security guards were being very rude and almost mean to people who didn't speak English. And they weren't, you know, they were foreign tourists or whatever. They weren't being helpful to them, trying to get them through. And then they were looking at the rest of the people like, look at these idiots. You know, that sort of stuff that is above and beyond. Do I want the job? No. But I just wonder if they were a little more cheerful, if things might go better, too.
If that Egypt Air crash was an explosion, if it was a terrorist, you know, I'll be very interested to find out how they got through security in Paris. How did that happen? Mm-hmm. Steve, you and I have just been through. I was there a couple of weeks ago, and security there seemed to be every bit as intense as it is here. So we'll wait and see. We will have to wait and see. And yet Donald Trump tweeted almost immediately after the plane was missing, looks like yet another terrorist attack. Airplane departed from Paris. When will we get tough, smart, and vigilant? Great hate and sickness was his tweet. And then he tweeted after that, a plane got blown out of the sky. And if anyone doesn't think it was blown out of the sky, you're 100% wrong.
Yeah, he spoke those words. Yeah.
And then let me just finish with what Hillary Clinton said on CNN. She said that Donald Trump says, quote, a lot of things that are provocative that actually make the important task of building this coalition, bringing everybody to the table and defeating terrorism more difficult. So each of them have sort of managed this in their own style. She was cautious and reserved at first. And now she's saying that Donald Trump is demonstrating that he makes things worse.
So she, and in this interview with CNN, they made a big deal of her finally saying he is unqualified. She had sort of hedged around that before, and finally she came out and said it. And they tried to make this into, you know, a big story. I just thought it was sort of ridiculous. People have been saying that for the past year.
I think she wanted to make it a story too, because she started fundraising on it right away.
Yes,
so I mean, I wonder if it was her strategy
on him not being qualified,
right? With using that language, mm-hmm. right?
Really? Oh, that strikes you as strident or strong or
no?
Meaningful?
Just calculated. We're going to roll the unqualified stuff out today.
Well, yeah, but I mean, so what's the difference between that and any other race? Normally, they would say I would be a better candidate, but she's saying he's wholly unqualified, and that's deemed significant, huh?
It for whatever reason, I think because she has been so cautious and she's so messaged. I just felt like the whole CNN interview was set up. They're like, okay. She's ask her the question because she's going to give you the answer this time. And that it was really just a big deal out of nothing, in my opinion. And she was here. She was in Park Ridge in her hometown when
at
she made
Pickwick
that.
At the Pickwick Theater.
She was.
Then so Donald Trump, of course, took that and said that Hillary Clinton said he should not be allowed to run for office.
Which is not what she said.
Which is not at all what she said, but it's what he said she said, so that's what matters.
Well, and then he said her response was dumb. I think he just kept calling it.
I'm just, Hillary, if your ears find this podcast, please don't go there. Please don't give him a nickname. Please don't respond to every stupid tweet. Don't go there.
He called her husband a rapist this week.
I wouldn't respond to that. I wouldn't respond to
that. She hasn't. There's actually a New York Times piece, I think, up today where they kind of walk through all of these things, and you can see where she's going to take all of this, and it's really just not addressing it.
That's Kristen McQuarrie. You also heard, of course, our Steve Bertrand from WGN Radio. There is the Mincing Rascals. You can subscribe to the Mincing Rascals podcast on iTunes. We always post it at WGNplus.com. It's always on my Facebook page. I am King John on Facebook. By the way, at the end of that podcast, and so we went from there then to a really, I thought the guys were really interesting what they were saying about Bernie Sanders and his fight with the Democratic Party right now. And then at the end, we always make a recommendation. I had a recipe for whiskey sours. Kristen had a song that she really liked, and she was so into it that she wanted to play a little of it for us.
All right, this remarkably low-tech performance of the Mincing Rascals concludes now with Kristen McQuarrie, I believe, holding her cell phone up to the microphone.
No, it's your close and play.
A close and play. How retro.
I don't even know what you're talking about. Yeah,
of course you don't. You're under 100. That's
come on, let it be.
Kristen McQuarrie, thank God this is over, from the Chicago Tribune.
Christy McQuarrie. Eric Zorn is always a part of that podcast. He couldn't be with us this week. We'll talk to you next week, Mr. Zorn. Let's pause here and then talk a little bit about Leon's frozen custard stand in Milwaukee. I don't know a lot about this story, but I think I know all I need to know. The guy that runs it doesn't want his customers or his staff to speak anything but English. Even if the worker and the customer both speak Spanish, he wants it to be an English-only business. I know I heard Bill and Wendy talk a little bit about this. I wonder what you thought about this. You can call me right now, 312-981-7200. Here comes a text, 312-981-7200. This is WGN. So the news with Bob here in a couple of minutes. That is at 2 o'clock on WGN. This is John Williams. So in nearby Milwaukee, there's a place called Leon's Frozen Custard Stand, and the guy that runs it only wants his customers and his staff to speak English, even if both of them speak Spanish. Even if they don't speak English, he doesn't want you there. He only wants English speaking going on at his frozen custard stand. You know, I'm not real exercised about this. I think that's his right. If he wants to cut off his nose to spite his face, he gets to do that. I don't think he's breaking any laws or rules here.
I think it is. I'm looking at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Rules requiring workers to speak only English violate federal law unless they're reasonably necessary for the business operation.
Wow. Okay.
He may be running into a spot of bother there.
Federal schmedrel, okay? I know there are people like him out there, and I know we all get frustrated when somebody on one end of that exchange doesn't speak good enough English here in the United States of America. So that's a frustration that we all deal with when we do business in the world. You know, I get it. And to me, a business should be sovereign. He gets to do at his shop whatever he wants. And I guess I'm going to run into federal law here. Is that what you're telling me, Bob?
He
doesn't get to do that. Because I was going to argue that I think, you know, that's a stupid way to be, and it's a hateful way to be. But we have stupid, hateful people in this country. And if he wants to damage his business by not serving Spanish speakers, I think he has a right to go under, you know. But I guess not, huh? So does that story in the Journal Sentinel today say that he's going to change or amend his policy then?
No, he was going to have a meeting between Latino civil rights or a Latino civil rights organization.
Are they
going
to speak English at that meeting?
The meeting was canceled.
Oh, okay. So maybe he'll change his ways.
Can I just jump with an anecdote?
Yeah.
I work at a grocery store when I'm not working Saturdays here at WGN, and this happened just last week. This just reminded me of it. A customer came up. I work at the deli and said, Espanol? And I said, no, I'm sorry. I don't speak Spanish. And he made it clear that we really couldn't communicate if I couldn't speak Spanish. So I went and got a coworker of mine who does. And it took, I don't know, 45 seconds. And then I get this coworker finally up to the counter, and he says, sí. And the guy said, tacos? I could have done that one. I know tacos.
And in that scene, you know, the guy doesn't speak English. I feel bad for people who don't speak very good English and are living in this country. Talk about a foreign world. And frankly, the people who do speak, you know, passable but broken English have a better mastery of language than I do because they're fluent in their native tongue. And then they speak good enough English to get by. So, you know, it's uncomfortable or sometimes impossible for us, but I'm not into the business of beating them up because they don't sound like me. So that's my attitude about that. Let's pause here. We'll get you into the newsroom. Still to come, our Vibe Score segment. That's a little bit of everything. And the guy whose video went viral is a very interesting conversation this week from Midway. First, the news. That's next here on WGN. Thank you, Bob. In this half hour, we'll talk to Thomas Jefferson for just a little bit. You know, I came up with a real good idea this week, Bob. Tell me if this already exists. Is there an app that will tell you how long the lines are for TSA at the airports?
I don't know if there is, but there I would assume there is, because that seems like it's a knowable bit of information.
I know.
And it's something people want to know.
And there, they sometimes have a sign that will say, you know, estimated time in this line. You'll see that at a lot of places that have long lines. They'll say your wait in this line is estimated to be 18 minutes. And I've seen that at airports. A friend of mine was at O'Hare this week, and it was about a two-hour line. And then somebody called me yesterday and said they just got through O'Hare, and it was 10 minutes. That would have a lot to do with how you plan your trip to the airport if you knew what the TSA line was that day.
You could do it in that we could do a weather forecast, traffic times, and then the TSA lines in the newscast.
If you had that information, people would listen for it. I'm telling you.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking about this because earlier this week, I'll play back for you part of this conversation I had with Sean Hoffman. He's the guy who's video went viral when he was standing in line at Midway Airport, and there was that gigantic TSA line. I asked him how long the video has been seen.
Somewhere around 2.2 million views on YouTube.
And you, it was at Midway that you had your thing, right?
Yeah, I was flying out of Midway, and that's where it all went down.
And so where do you live, and what brought you through Midway? Are you a Chicagoan?
I'm actually from Eugene, Oregon. And I was out in the Midwest. I'm a photographer. I was doing some events out there, and I was heading home.
So you're heading from Midway, then back to Eugene. You go to Midway, and you encountered a line that ran how long?
Well, I don't know how long it was in terms of miles. It seemed like several. It did take me a full hour and a half to clear security from the back of the line.
Now, you were at Midway. As I said, a lot of people went through O'Hare last weekend, and some of them at O'Hare stood in lines, TSA lines, not Delta or American Airline lines. The TSA line was 3 hours at O'Hare, and a lot of people missed their flights because they simply couldn't get through security. They slept on cots and then flew out the next day. Did you know in advance, Sean, that it was going to be a really bad day at Midway?
I did not know that. I've just kind of, you know, I travel quite a bit, and I've just kind of felt it just kind of building up. And so I did anticipate a little bit, and I thought, you know, I'm usually the kind of guy, like when I fly out of Portland, Oregon, I like to go get there in time to grab maybe one beer at the bar before I have to catch my flight.
Yeah.
And I thought, you know, Chicago, maybe I ought to give myself time for two or three beers, you know?
Sure.
And luckily I did, because I did make my flight, but just barely. I had to sprint. And I think the only reason I actually made my flight is because my flight was slightly delayed.
When they did the news stories about the three-hour delays at O'Hare, the news stations were talking to people, and they didn't seem to be as insane as I thought they would be. What was the attitude like in your line, Sean? Were people ticked or what?
There was a lot of contempt for the TSA, a lot of people talking trash, rightly so in my mind. I think a lot of the people there hadn't seen anything like that either. We were all just kind of taken aback by it. Some people that were standing next to me already knew that they were going to miss their flight, and they were just kind of taking it in stride. And they said, well, we'll just get on the other side and deal with it then. Kind of a spectacle, really. You know, we were all just kind of chuckling about how we got to this point in society.
When you got up to the gate then, that is to the TSA checkpoint, what was that like?
That went slow as well. There were only three people checking IDs, two for the regular masses and one for the TSA pre-check.
That was a line with three people checking?
Three people checking.
I mean, that explains it, but why in the world does Midway Airport have three people?
Well, when we were waiting in line, and I was about halfway through the line, a door opened up, and I think there were six or eight TSA agents just came slowly strolling through like they'd been on break or something.
Wow.
And they saw the line and they went, whoa. And we all kind of jostled them, you know, get back to work, boys. If you work at another job in the private sector and you get a big rush like that, it's kind of all hands on deck and people will just, you know, work harder, faster. And it just didn't seem like there was any sort of sense of urgency with this, you know, probably 500 people in line. No sense of urgency to get through it, you know?
Yeah, if I'm TSA, I'm like, hey, guess what? It's Christmas Eve and we're Toys R Us, man. It's time to get everybody out there. Sorry, you'll get your break tomorrow.
Exactly.
The guy that was wanding you or checking your bag, you know, I think those people will end up taking a lot of grief, and yet they were the ones working. The problem is the people administrating TSA aren't getting enough people out there. That's the problem.
I absolutely agree with you. Whoever's running the show is just mismanaging it to a point of now it's become a national joke.
It is. I mean, you know what? And you know what? Good for you, because I think we sort of talk about these things in the abstract. You know, it may be 2 hours. It may be 20 minutes. You just don't know until you get there.
somebody made a comment on my video that I thought was quite humorous and said, "Hey, everybody calm down. This won't be a problem as long as you get there the standard 24 hours before your flight."
Yeah, really. Well, you got a good sense of humor about it. I'm sure you were angry then, but I think the greater point is that that video is going to be a reminder to every member of Congress, right, Ben?
Absolutely.
Were there any families with small kids standing in line, and were there any tantrums or meltdowns?
I didn't notice any specific extra childly tantrums. There weren't any kids right around my area.
I'd be more worried about the 58-year-old business guy who's got to get to Cleveland. I mean, really, I've seen people on ordinary days, you know, just go nuts.
Well, it's like, I mean, how my company, for example, they pay good money to get me to places where I need to be to work, photograph special events. If I don't show up, they don't make any money. They've already put out a ton of money for my travel. And if I miss the TSA checkpoint because it's too slow, well, they're out all that money. I can't imagine how many hundreds of thousands of times that's going on right now, yeah, where families are forced to buy hotel rooms, you know, forced to buy an extra.
What if it was a wedding? What if it was a wedding? You know, and you say, all right, we got there 2 hours early. We get there 2.5 hours early. We didn't get through the TSA line for 3 hours. I know we all need to take responsibility, but that's not on us. That's on them. That's amazing. Right. All right, Sean. Nice to talk to you. Thanks for your time and continued success in your endeavor, sir.
Why, thank you very much.
So that's Sean Hoffman. He's the guy whose video you can see on my Facebook page. I'm King John. You can just Google the viral video from Midway, but it's epic. It's hilarious slash sad, that line at Midway.
There's something about the Midway setup that it seems massive no matter what. Mm-hmm. I flew out of there last summer, around must have been end of June, and it's just you walk in there, you feel like you're in this giant cattle pen, you know?
Even
when it moves fast, it's slow.
And can you imagine? Because people were turning corners thinking, okay, we're almost there, and then it's just endless. And then you finally get to the massive pen area. It took it would take you an hour just to get to that spot. So we'll pause here and go back in time and visit with our old friend Thomas Jefferson. I like to talk to him once in a while, and he and I have been having some really good conversations lately. They are our podcasts, which you can hear, and an excerpt from that's right around the corner. We'll talk to Jefferson a little bit about the politics of today on WGN. Thomas Jefferson appears in a podcast with me almost every week. We put up a new one last week, and we dropped another one yesterday. You can find it at WGNplus.com. You can find it on my Facebook page. But let me just give you a sample of what it's like. The conversations usually go about 10 to 15 minutes. Here's about 4 or 5 of me and TJ from yesterday. This is John Williams reaching out once again to our old friend Thomas Jefferson. President Jefferson, are you there?
Good day, my dear citizen.
It's good to hear your voice. We had missed a couple of dates. I know you were traveling and busy on the farm, but we spoke last week, and I wanted to kind of pick up this week our conversation from last, if that's okay.
Certainly, sir.
You talked about your debt. You talked
I had $104,000 in debt in 1826. That would be, you know, $8 or $9 million in your time.
Well, the reason it even came up was because there's this ongoing discussion about the people running for president and how much of their personal finances should we know? Should they release their income tax returns, etc.? You're no fan of that, are you?
No, I think that we are entitled to a very high level of privacy, a sort of wall of separation between our public lives and our private lives. And if I had been told that the price of being president or governor or secretary of state was that people would know about my children and would know about my finances and would see what amounted to tax returns for Virginia and would be able to quiz me about my religious sensibilities and so on, my favorite book, things like that, I would have quietly turned and walked away because I want nothing to do with a world in which that is regarded as useful information, number one, and where the public feels entitled to skewer a public figure for things that are none of their business.
Yeah. Just last week, Justin Bieber announced that he's not going to take pictures with his fans anymore. He said he feels like an animal in the zoo because people come up and stare and want a little piece of him. Imagine that, you having something in common with Justin Bieber.
Well, this is fundamentally different. Here's a young man who, as I understand it, has spent his entire life trying to become famous.
Yeah.
And now that he has, he pretends that he regrets it. I can't feel any sympathy at all for such a person. But I never did that. I never wanted to be known. I always said that if I were important, it was because of the ideas that I was articulating. And those were not my ideas. Those were the broad ideas of natural law and the Enlightenment. I was very uncomfortable with public notoriety of any sort. I traveled incognito. You know, once I was traveling as president in a carriage, I believe between Monticello and Washington, D.C., and I was just a Virginia gentleman, and another man got in the carriage, and for about 3.5 hours he was criticizing President Jefferson and saying that he was an atheist and a Francophile, and that his policies were a disaster and his personal life was unscrupulous and so on. And I nodded politely all the while and let him speak. And then when we got out of the carriage, one of the hosts said, "Oh, President Jefferson, here you are." And the man blushed and was abashed that he had been so mean-spirited toward me. But I shook his hand and said, "You know, you've done me a favor. You have spoken candidly, and you would not have spoken candidly had I announced who I was."
So just humor me. What was your favorite book? Here we are sitting on the CNN or Fox News set. What is your favorite book, President Jefferson?
So, while I was telling that very sentimental anecdote, you were just thinking of asking me this question. That's great. My favorite book of novels, of fiction, is Don Quixote, which I read in Spanish on my way from Boston to England and France in 1784. I learned Spanish on board that ship and read Don Quixote as my key. In nonfiction, I think maybe the histories of Tacitus, the Roman historian of the first century A.D., I would say is my favorite book. What's your favorite book, sir?
I could answer that, but I was just thinking on my most recent transatlantic voyage, we went from Chicago to Paris, and as we went over, I watched Star Wars. You learned Spanish and then read Don Quixote. So the times have changed, haven't they?
It was 19 days to get across the Atlantic. I'm sure it was less than 19 hours.
It was 8 hours. It was grueling. We sat in coach. You wouldn't believe it.
But I wonder what you would have done with 19 days.
I don't know that I would have learned a foreign language, although I was trying to brush up on my French.
I mean, you were using it, using your own time well, if that's the case, a little entertainment and perhaps a meal or two, a glass of Bordeaux, and then some French.
Civil, enlightened, fair, Thomas Jefferson. Oh, that all of our politicians were like that. And then he spoke a little more specifically about some of the candidates running right now. And that podcast is at WGNplus.com. You'll see a picture of TJ there, or you can find it on my Facebook page. I'm King John on Facebook. How about that Justin Bieber reference, Griff? I think that's the first time we've ever brought Justin Bieber into a conversation with Thomas Jefferson.
I love it. Yeah, you should ask him about more pop stars. I didn't hear that news story, though, that he wasn't going to take photos with fans anymore.
Yeah, he feels like a fish in a fish bowl, and he doesn't. And he said, "You don't own me. You know, I'm an artist." I kind of get that. But
yeah, I mean, nobody's going to weep for Justin Bieber, but I think about him especially more than anybody because he's so young and so famous. Like, that must be kind of scary sometimes to live such a strange life. But that story reminded me, I watched this documentary about Conan O'Brien after he lost The Tonight Show and he went on that tour across the country. And he loves interacting with fans and he tries to take photos and talk to as many as he can. But I didn't know this. He would often tell fans, "I can't do pictures right now because it takes too much time when there's a huge crowd." And he would just do, I'll give you an autograph. Is that okay?" And people would react very rudely. They'd be like, "No, it's not okay. I want a picture."
Really?
And that happened multiple times. And when you see that, you think, oh, geez, I can't judge Justin Bieber or anybody for making a decision like that because I have no way to relate to that life.
Yeah, no kidding. You're right. He must wonder what it's like for the rest of us, just like we must wonder what it's like for him. But so people were like indignant.
They wouldn't say, "No, that's not okay," but they'd be like, "Oh, come on."
Yeah,
and
yeah.
He fights with his handlers to let him interact with fans more, and then he gets there, and then they treat him like that.
He hates it.
Oh, man, yeah.
Well, time is currency. Is a currency for people like that. You know, like Conan's got all the money in the world, but he doesn't have all the time or all the privacy. And so I suppose you sometimes say no because you just don't want to spend any more of that.
Yeah.
The Vibe Score segment comes your way after Bob Kessler's news. By the way, I also need to at least mention to Bob after the news how I blew up the internet with my CNN tweet. Did you see my CNN tweet this week, Griff? I was kind of proud of that.
No,
oh, boy, are you in for a treat? That'll be after the news. We'll do our Vibe Score segment. We'll visit with the boys from The Beat here on WGN. John Williams here. You're listening to WGN Radio. This is our weekly Vibe Score segment. Vibe Score is an app I co-developed with Tom Hegberg. He's my cousin. And with Vibe Score, we send you the news that you want, and then we ask you about it, tell you about it, and you get to score the news. There's always a relevant question at the end of each post, and we ask you about it. In the music category, what were we listening to there, Griffin?
That was the new song called Angels from Chicago's own Chance the Rapper. He's back with his third release, Coloring Book. It came out over the week, just this past week. And the video for that song, too, is amazing. It features him flying around the Chicago skyline and riding on top of an L car. And so we put that up and asked people to score it.
What are we getting on that one?
Well, I just realized I took this number down right after I scored it and was the only one that had scored it. So it was 92.
Well,
maybe
then guess
changed.
What? If you want to move the needle, you got to get Vibe Score. It's free and change it or check it out if you've got it on your phone. I know a lot of you do already. It's Vibe Score, one word. And I saw a story about it in the paper today, and I actually haven't watched that one, Griff, but I liked what I heard there, so far, so good.
Yeah, he's an... Kristen's here, too. She's just about to pop in. But he's been around for a few years now, and he's just been growing. Now he's working with Kanye West, who we talked about earlier in the show. And I absolutely love him. I think he's about as talented as you could be.
Was he on the interview show with Mark Baser? I think he was.
I think I would remember if I'd ever seen
him. I wouldn't be surprised.
But yeah, you never know.
Yeah, yeah. How are you, Deck?
I'm a little out of breath.
Kathy and Judy's producer, Kristen Decker, our good friend, has just peeled into the studio.
Oh my goodness. Traffic on Michigan Avenue is terrible. And then I just parked in a flashing zone only. So I hope I don't get towed, but... it'll be worth it. And then I ran.
Listen, Deck, for future reference, this segment is not as important.
I did not know you were coming. And then when you said, I'm in front of the water tower.
I said, good.
I didn't know.
It's your birthday.
Happy birthday, Griff.
Oh, my gosh.
I'm sorry for the realness.
Another music thing that we put up was this week was the 50th anniversary of Pet Sounds by the Beach Boys.
I'll bet that is trending very well on Vibe Score. I'd like that. It's one of the few Beach Boy albums I own still.
Many regarded as one of the best of all time.
It's why I bought Pitchfork tickets.
Yeah, Brian Wilson's going to be at Pitchfork in Chicago this summer performing it front to back.
Boy, I hope that goes good. I know he's been doing this tour. You know, he's just doing the whole album, kind of like Stevie Wonder did Songs in the Key of Life. I like that. I'm a little worried for him, so I hope it goes good.
I think he's in fine shape now, and it's been going pretty well. It's getting an 88. Don't see why not. In the viral section, a picture circulating online appears to be a brick wall with a rock stuck between two bricks.
I love this.
This is hard hitting.
Well, just for fun. This is viral stuff, man.
Again, where was Bob with this headline? I don't.
I saw that this week, and I saw the cigar within a few seconds. I'm like, what is going?
Shame.
Why is this a thing? It's a cigar and a brick wall. I mean, we'll look at anything now.
I saw it on Facebook and didn't. I was like, there's no illusion. I don't know what they're talking about. Scroll past it. Then when I pulled it open on Vibe Score, I saw the cigar immediately. I was like, I didn't see that before.
I read the article on Vibe Score, then went back and looked and still couldn't find the damn cigar.
Well, people might not know. Well, I guess there's no way to explain it, except it's hard to see what's actually there until someone tells you what you're looking at. It's an optical illusion.
Yeah, I mean, but it's there, and then when they point it out to you, you can't believe you didn't see. And some people are gifted, like Bob Kessler. They just walk right up and go, oh, there's a cigar sticking out of a wall.
How is that an illusion? A thing is hiding. An illusion is like the two lines should look you know, like, longer than the other.
Do you remember
and the other,
Magic Eye?
Right.
Those Magic
yeah, I can't
Eye
do
books?
Those. Yeah, those. My, I was born cross-eyed.
This one is...
I'm not kidding. That's true. I can't.
I know. Well, maybe you had an advantage, Bob, that yes. your eyes don't line up perfectly. You saw it differently than the rest of us do. Maybe. When I saw the thing originally, I didn't see it. I went back and read about it. Still couldn't see it. Then you see it. I think it's this summer's gold dress, blue dress,
I
or
knew
whatever.
You were
gonna
say that.
Will, don't you think it feels
yes,
like it, that, Dick?
Yeah, definitely.
All right, what's next, Griff?
In news and current events, you mentioned in the Mincing Rascals that New York Times story that's the most read of the year so far for them.
Most shared, too, yeah.
About Donald Trump and his treatment of women. What do you think of it? 100, we said, was what you'd give it if you thought it was good reporting. 0 is shamelessly biased or shamefully biased, either way, I guess. What would you give it?
I came in at about a 60 on this one, maybe a little higher. I don't remember my exact score, but I think they were out to get Trump with the story. I think it was factual reporting, but I also think it was slanted. And remember, they interviewed that one woman who is a girlfriend of his, and they described how he paraded her around one of his parties in a bikini, and they called it debasing. She tells the same story the same way, and she says, but I wasn't debased. I thought it was lovely. So,
well, that's her opinion, though. The act, I thought, was true. It's debasing.
Well,
just because she doesn't care if she's, like, strewn around like a piece of meat, that doesn't mean...
She was, but does she get to decide, or maybe she doesn't, right, Decker? Maybe she doesn't...
I don't think she gets to really decide.
Even though it was her, right?
Yeah.
I liked
Some women like that attention. It's still demeaning to women as a whole.
I liked what Steve Bertrand had to say about it. It's like, can you imagine if Hillary Clinton...
Exactly. With her pool boy.
Had a pool boy with a Speedo that was on her arm. I mean, if she was single. It's a false equivalency.
Yeah.
But if she was single, whatever.
But basically, he made a great point that women would never be able to do that.
Yeah. I couldn't get my head... Bertrand, this is in the Mincing Rascals podcast that you can hear as well. I couldn't even begin to connect the dots on that.
I know. I didn't understand. I totally got where he was... I was like, yes.
So
I guess I just
is
enjoyed
single,
that.
And there's a pool boy on his... Whatever.
I just enjoy that image. It's getting a 51, so very, very split on this.
And I will say there are a few people that I really respect their opinion, and I was very surprised by their score on Vibe Score on this certain topic.
That's funny. Well, I think 51's a low score. 1 to 100. 100 is, New York Times home run, and this their most read story of the year. 51 is not a good score in my humble estimation.
No, it's not a term paper, though. It's not an F. That means that people were either on one side, like... Equal on both sides is how I see a 50.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Same.
In politics, sticking with politics, maybe many think he's got no chance at the nomination, but Bernie is still winning states and refuses to go away. So what's your vibe for his campaign today?
I'm loving the burn. I'm still feeling the burn.
Same.
I gave him a really good number on this one. Is he getting a good score overall, Griff?
He's getting a 57.
He is principled. I mean, you know, he is what he is. He's Bernie. He doesn't play to convention. I admire that, even if it's doomed.
Yeah. That's enough politics. We try to leave that for the rest of the show, I guess. In TV, The Good Wife ended its 7th season a couple weeks ago, and that was the end of the show's entire run. Many critics didn't like the last season and episode. We waited to make sure everybody had seen the last episode and asked what you thought. Did you watch it?
I didn't watch the last episode, and I wish we had asked instead, what did you just make of the whole run of The Good Wife?
Okay, we'll do that. What's your score for The Good Wife?
90. I love that show. Love the clothes. Love her. Love it. It was good. Good show. But I got to go back. I didn't watch last season, so I'm behind on
that. I know some people that love the show and really hated that last episode. It's getting a 57 for us, so.
Too bad.
Yeah, all around the 50s here. In sports, Rougned Odor, I forgot to find out how to pronounce his first name, but Odor was suspended 8 games for punching out Jose Bautista after a scuffle at second base, leading to a bench-clearing fight. Have you seen that fight?
It's amazing. It's brutal. I think he's lucky to get 8 games.
It's not so we asked, that was the question, is that too much punishment or not enough? 100 would be too much, 0 is not enough.
I believe I was 33 on this one. That is not enough. That's bad.
I would say with the baseball season being so long, more games.
in a bar not too... No, it wasn't a bar. So the big fishing opener in Minnesota was last weekend, and half of the state goes out and fishes. In central Minnesota, one of the big lakes that people like to go, a couple of guys went fishing. Afterwards, they went drinking. Afterwards, they got in a fight.
Oh,
Minnesota.
The one guy,
I know, imagine this. The one guy punched the other guy in the face and killed him with that punch. I mean, that can happen. Never mind end the guy's career. That was a punch.
He landed that punch.
Oh, my God. I'm surprised that Batista's in the game. You know, he's still playing. That dude can take a punch. I'll give him that.
Getting a 30, so that's near where you put it. And I was talking to somebody about this, and they said, notice where the ball went when he threw it. Because he immediately threw the punch very quickly after he threw the ball. But notice that the ball did not go anywhere near first base. And this person I was talking to said, that's because he was trying to hit Jose Bautista in the face with the ball.
Wow.
And he missed, so then he punched him. And imagine if that had happened. It would be 1,000 times worse.
And
it's like, yeah, he probably should have gotten more than 8.
This all goes back to the bat flip.
So is Bautista like a
year.
Trash talker? Or like what? What's
it all
why
started last season when he flipped the bat against this team. He did that. Remember that bat flip?
It was a gigantic home run. It was so awesome. It was the best bat. It was a good bat flip.
It was amazing. It was the best thing ever. But I think the tension is still there from last season. And
you think?
Yeah.
Testosterone.
So they hit him with a pitch, and then this erupted on the field. It was crazy.
Hey, can I just mention something about drinking in Minnesota? Did you guys see the list of the drunkest cities this week?
I just saw that Wisconsin was number one.
Wisconsin
is not surprising.
Of the top 10 drunkest cities in America, 7 of them are in Wisconsin.
The first four are
in Wisconsin. It's Oshkosh and Green Bay and Madison, and it's not all college towns. Some of them are just, you know, Green Bay. They're just like people drinking. It's 17 of the drunkest 20 cities in America are in Wisconsin, Iowa, Minnesota, and North Dakota. This is the drunk belt is what we are.
Lack of big cities equals nothing to do equals let's drink some beer.
Yeah, but that's the case in a lot of states, though. I mean, it does seem to especially...
It's part of the Wisconsin culture.
Yeah,
man.
Yeah.
And, you know,
that's okay.
Long, cold winters. Okay, Griff, what's next?
In the movies category, Space Jam 2 is reportedly in the works. A script is being produced by Justin Lin, who directed movies in the Saw franchise, for Fast and Furious movies, mm-hmm. Conjuring, Star Trek, one on the way. So he's done a lot, and he's apparently working on this script. LeBron James is apparently set to star.
Space Jam was awesome. LeBron James is a movie star. I think this is going to be big. I'm going to go. Brenda and I will be there opening night.
I know that.
I'm almost not kidding. I mean, Brenda won't go with me opening night. I want to see this movie.
Let's get you a press pass.
No, doesn't that sound like fun, though?
I remember you having a similar reaction to Beverly Hills Chihuahua. you get an idea, and you just... There's no way... But I'm actually with you on this one.
I don't know. I scored it in the 60s because I thought... I did love Space Jam.
Okay.
I was also in 7th grade, or maybe 8th grade, so... I was of the age.
You want to check and see how it's aged. Sometimes they don't. I think Space Jam's probably okay. And what I do know for a fact is LeBron James is a way better actor than Michael Jordan.
Yeah, right.
So I think
I did love the Space Jam soundtrack. So if R. Kelly can sign on again and like produce Space Jam 2,
we'll see.
Soundtrack, I'm all over it.
It's getting an 83. And then the last one was the Calvin Klein ad controversy. Have you seen that?
Yeah, I know.
They're facing a huge backlash after an upskirt ad, in quotes.
Calvin has always pushed the lines in this regard. Like, I remember the 90s, it was the heroin chic look that his ads were all, you know, focusing on.
Mm-hmm. And everyone was does this sort of thing,
yeah.
too.
But this is, like, there's no, it's just wrong. It's just wrong.
I know, and when I say I agree with you, then I go, somebody at Calvin Klein is going, yes, that's exactly what we wanted from the old
guy. But it's not even showcasing their clothes.
It's like, rude.
Yeah, it's rude.
I don't know. Where are you
and
on
I'm
that
not
one,
old.
Griff? Are you bent out of shape about it?
No, I agree with you guys. It's kind of gross. When I first heard about it, I kind of thought what you said. Like, isn't this what they always do? I didn't exactly understand why it was so different this time, and I'm still not fully there.
So you're looking up the skirt, like the shit's shot down below, and you're looking up the dress of a woman, and then she's got some polka dot underwear on, and aren't they nice underwear? I guess that's one way to show underwear, but the angle is offensive.
I guess so, yeah.
It reminds me of the, you know, people got bent out of shape about the Marilyn Monroe thing. Remember that? The big Marilyn Monroe outside the GN studios? Oh,
I have so many, I remember so many teenage boys standing underneath Marilyn Monroe, like looking up like, yes.
Yeah.
I would see them take picture after picture after picture.
Adults were doing it.
Everybody did, yeah.
Everybody did. And Mary Schmeek wrote a great column about it. She just thought it was offensive. It was offensive to Marilyn. She was a real person, blah, blah, blah. I think she was right.
I agree with, yeah.
I'm sorry.
When I think back on that, I think, I can't believe that that happened. Sorry for the realness. Oh, my gosh.
Oh my gosh.
I can't stop. I can't. Ever since I heard it on the start of your show, I've said it so many times.
I know, and I forgot to play.
You got to pause.
Well, hold on a second. Let me find it here. This will be so much fun. We'll end this segment with a little Kanye love.
I'm sorry, daytime television. I'm sorry for the realness.
I'm sorry for the realness. That's my sign-off. All right. Thanks, Deck. Nice to hear your voice.
All right. Now I've got to go see if my car's towed.
That's our Vibe Score segment. Vibe Score is one word, VibeScore. You can get it at the App Store. We'll check in with the boys from The Beat in a minute on WGN. It's time for the boys from The Beat. Mark Carman and Adam Hoger in the studio, ready to talk some sports for you. Hi, fellas.
Hello, John. I got a question for you as I was just listening to you talk about Rougned Odor.
Yeah.
Let's say, for argument's sake, that he throws the same punch, but he whiffs.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know if his suspension should be any different just for landing it, just because he landed it better than Muhammad Ali in his prime.
I know.
You know? I've been having this debate.
He wouldn't have gotten 8 games if he missed.
Right. If he misses, he doesn't get 8 games. But just because he threw a great punch, I mean, isn't it the intent more than what actually happened?
Yeah, that's an interesting point. I mean, I see how, though, you got to add on more. But if he had whiffed, then what is that? Maybe 4 games or 2 games or something like that?
Yeah, I'd say 2.
And Batista gets thrown out for a game. Was that fair? I mean, what did he do? He just slid into second. It was not a tough slide.
But he overslid the bag. I mean,
you think so?
He was 3 feet past the bag when he stopped. But, if you watch the replay over and over again, which it takes on this one to really see everything, I mean, Odor just starts walking right at him. So that, and then, I mean, Batista was cocked, ready to throw the punch. He just was slow.
You think he's taking some grief from his teammates, Batista? It's like they're probably laughing at him now, right? I mean, boy, did you get rung up and everybody's watching it over. It's got to be embarrassing.
Yeah, it definitely brought back some memories from 10 years ago yesterday. Michael Barrett punching AJ Pierzynski right in the face. Kind of a similar situation. The only difference is that that's at home plate where collisions are pretty frequent, especially 10 years ago before they started trying to ban them.
That and Pierzynski deserved it.
You know, I was watching the video.
Just for being AJ.
And then in the YouTube column there, you know how when you see one video, they start to send you other videos like that? So they showed a video of the Oakland A's and the Cincinnati Reds, and it showed this one guy from the Reds barreling into the second baseman, or it's probably the shortstop coming over for the A's. And it was insane. The guy chopped his steps about a third of the way out so that he could time his hit. He didn't slide. He was way off base. He just barrel rolled into the shortstop that was, you know, coming across the bag. And they just said that was old school. Today, you know, after you go to the hospital, they suspend you for life. It was such an insane hit. And, you know, nobody said anything about it. The announcers, the umpire didn't say anything. The announcers didn't say anything. It's a different world now, you know?
Well, yeah, and the guys that played then, they think that today's people are soft. Oh, they're so soft. They have no toughness. Why can't we go in there and just kill people like we used to? I mean,
that's true.
And in Batista's case, you know, the slide that you're talking about, he did overslide the bag, but he didn't come in spikes up.
Do you think this thing is over now, Mark?
I hope they play in the playoffs and it's not over. Absolutely, I hope not. This is great for baseball in my mind.
I just don't understand why they got so mad at each other. It's baseball.
Because they're so I'm just going to be a huge hypocrite. Because they're so soft. Because Batista does the bat flip, the greatest bat flip ever. That bothers you?
It was real. It wasn't mocking. It was real. It was a genuine emotion he was expressing. Good show, guys, already. We'll continue to listen. Thanks for hanging out with me, and we'll be tuning in after the news.
Thanks, John.
That's Adam Hogue and Mark Carmen coming up on WGN.